Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagri Vada Jahi Girivara Jari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagirivara Jari Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamana Tira Vana Chari Yamana Tira Vana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagri Vada Jari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagri Vada Jari Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamana Tira Vana Chani Yamana Tira Vana Chani Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivijagacharya Astakarapasya Srimad His Divine Grace is the Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Kaur Pimanandi. Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya text 11 from Brahma's Prayers, Canto 10, Chapter 14. Kvaham tamo mahadaham ka charadnivarbho. Samveshti tanda gata sapta vitastikayaha. Kredvig vidha viganitada paranucharya. Vatadva roma vivarasya chate mahit dvam. Kvaham tamo mahadaham ka charagni varbho. Samveshti tanda gata sapta vitastikayaha. Kvedrig vidha vigati viganitanda paranucharya. Vatadva roma vistarasya chate mahitvam. Tanda gata sapta vitastikaya.
Yeah.
Material nature. Mahat, the total material energy. Aham, false ego. Ka, ether. Chara, air. Agni, fire. Vaha, water. Bhul, earth. Samveshtita, surrounded by. Andhagata, a pot-like universe. Sapta vittasi, seven spans. Kayaha, body. Kva, where. Idrik, such. Vidha, like. Abhiganita, unlimited. Anda, universes. Para anu, like the atomic dust. Charya, moving. Vata Advha, air holes. Roma, of hair on the body. Vivarasya, of the holes. Cha, also. Te, your. Mahitvam, greatness. Translation. Who am I, a small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand? I'm enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, water and fire, water and earth. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body just as particles of dust passed through the openings of a screened window. Purport. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 5, Text 72, Srila Prabhupada gives the following purport for this verse. Quote, when Lord Brahma, after having stolen all Krishna's cows and cowherd boys, returned and saw that the cows and boys were still roaming with Krishna, he offered this prayer in his defeat. A conditioned soul, even one so great as Brahma, who manages the affairs of the entire universe, cannot compare to the personality of Godhead, for he can produce numberless universes simply by the spiritual rays emanating from the pores of his body. Material scientists should take lessons from the utterances of Sri Brahma regarding our insignificance in comparison with God. In these prayers of Brahma, there is much to learn for those who are falsely puffed up by the accumulation of power. Unquote. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 1, Chapter 14, Srila Prabhupada further comments on this verse. Quote, Lord Brahma realized his actual position. He is certainly the supreme teacher of this universe in charge of the production of material nature, which consists of the complete material elements, false ego, sky, air, fire, water, and earth. Such a universe may be gigantic, but it can be measured, just as we measure our body as seven spans. Generally, everyone's personal bodily measurement is calculated to be seven spans of his hand. This particular universe may appear to be very gigantic body, but it is nothing but the measurement of seven spans of Lord Brahma. And the final paragraph. Aside from this universe, there are unlimited other universes outside the jurisdiction of this particular Lord Brahma, just as innumerable atomic, infinitesimal fragments pass through the holes of a screened window. So millions and trillions of universes in their seedling form are coming out from the bodily pores of Mahavishnu. And that Mahavishnu is but a part of the plenary expansion of Krishna. Under these circumstances, although Lord Brahma is the supreme creature within this universe, what is his importance in the presence of Lord Krishna? So we're going to go quickly to hopefully don't hit the wrong button this morning. The commentary of Vishwanath Jiva Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. Vishwanath writes, this is Brahma speaking, paraphrasing Brahma's words. Though you, that's Mahavishnu, or Krishna, create the universe, you are not proud of that. In comparison to that, what powers do I have to be proud of? You have as your body of the universe, surrounded by Prakriti, Mahatattva, Ahankara, ether, air, fire, water and earth, within which are situated all the planets from Patala to Satyaloka, and that expanse, where am I? Being only, now it says here, 3 hands tall, but it's seven. And within the pores of your skin, countless universes are moving like particles of air moving through the holes of a window screen. Who can measure that greatness? Here Brahma equates Mahavishnu as the creator of Mahatattva with Krishna, and shows that in comparison to Krishna, he is like a small bird in comparison to Garuda. Jiva Goswami, similar, Brahma's, paraphrasing Brahma's words, I am insignificant. I cannot make you, such a great person, forgive me. Since I am very different from you, who pervade the spiritual and material realms as Vasudeva, though I am the Lord of the material world. He praises Krishna as Mahavishnu in order to say this. The universe is compared to a pot because in a short time it will be destroyed. Brahma, just seven hands high, is an insignificant person. Mahavishnu is 9 hands in height. No explanation what that means. The universes pass through his pores, coming out and going in when he creates or destroys the universes. The pores are very small and limiting, but in them all the universe reside. All the universes reside. Then he quotes a verse from Vishnu Purana. Yaya yuta yutam shamshe Vishnu Shaktir Iyam Stita. Translation. The Shakti of Vishnu is situated in a 10 millionth portion of a portion of Vishnu. This is your glory, Mahitvam. Therefore, you should show mercy to me. And very short, Sanatana Goswami, that's the end. Paraphrasing. How can I, who am so insignificant, forgive you who are so great? This is Krishna's mood. The universe is like a pot, insignificant compared to the Lord's glory. What is your greatness? Therefore, you should forgive me. So this the dialogue between. Our acharyas sometimes do this. You know, the Lord is anticipating or reading the mind of the devotee, or vice versa. The devotee is appreciating the mood of the Lord who they're addressing, and so they're communicating back and forth without all the back and forth communication, just in a shorter phrase. Something like that. So Jiva Goswami is taking that this verse is a continuation of the mood and message of the previous verse. The mood and message of the previous verse was an appeal for mercy, an appeal for tolerance. Of course, the Lord is tolerant and he's merciful. Appeal for forgiveness. Not that he doesn't want to receive whatever the Lord wants to give him. He's not, you know, wiggling or maneuvering, but he wants to be in the grace of Krishna, in the recipient of the mercy of Krishna, without having his misdeed influence that relationship of his service, the mood of service, the Lord's compassion, etc. Like a child may do something that's untoward, but parents naturally, they may shake their finger or say something or do something, but it doesn't change the affection of the parents for the child. So like that, he's making this appeal. And another, the primary feature of the verse is Mahitvam. He's citing one amongst many of the Mahima, the glories of Krishna. No, he's authoritative. Brahma, the recipient of all the Vedas, he's the super scientist. He knows what scientists will never discover about the affairs of creation. Super technology. So with that fullness of his knowledge, he is now citing a very practical comparison between his so-called greatness and the greatness of Mahavishnu. And the conclusion is, therefore, you know, it's humility, with humility I'm submitting, not just cleverness I'm submitting, with genuine factual humility. So, okay, I have this service. Each of us, we have some service. And if the service that I do is whatever the service that we do. In his case, he's performing a service of creation of one universe. But that one universe, as big as the universe is, it has a measurement, and it has an end. Just like, so that's the expression here with Jiva Goswami pots will be broken. They're built, they last for some time, and eventually, so the pot-like andha, the pot-like nature of the universe is also, that's like a shell, like a coconut. Sometimes that comparison is made. And within the shell is Brahma and the universe that he, the sub-creation that he did. But the primary creation is Lord Vishnu, and the primary creation of Lord Vishnu is all the universes that, of course, all the universes also come and go. They're temporary, like his universe, they're all temporary. But the source of those temporary, and the rest of those temporary universes, and all living entities, etc., is Lord Vishnu. So who am I? Quite insignificant. Although I have some service, quite insignificant. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sharanagati songs, that's where the songs begin. Dainya, humility. Because without humility, how is the rest going to follow? How is Sharanagati, Sharana, how is surrender, submission going to take place? And again, and again, and again. So, Arjuna, they were in his relationship with Krishna as friend. And talks between friends, Prabhupada would say, is there's no end to it. You say, the other friend says, and there's no conclusion. Arjuna, recognizing there's going to be no conclusion to this friendly talk, let me just submit to you, because he knew Krishna's position. Not just he's the, you know, wiser friend, but he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he submitted to him, Shishas Teham Shadimam Tom Prapanam. And then the mood changed, and then Krishna began filling him with transcendental knowledge, making that reference. Similarly, one of the lecture series that Prabhupada spoke many times in many places, and one of them I had the direct experience of in New York, 1975, Prabhupada was visiting, and he spoke on the Sanatan Goswami section, chapter 20 of Madhya Lila. And as with other places, I mean, he liked speaking about this. In many places he spoke on the same set of verses. Sanatan Goswami's submission. And because he was qualified, and part of his qualification was he knew that he really didn't know. It's a disqualification when you think that you know and you don't really know. A disqualification. And then to explain to somebody that they don't really know, that takes some work. That's, you know, when we are engaged in our preaching work, that's one of the obstacles. You know, it's part of our service, but it's certainly an obstacle, just like some appreciation of the approach that Sariputta took. I like very much. I have great admiration for Sariputta's approach. And his approach was basically, he'd lay out, this is the model that science wishes us to accept. And they put forward the model based on these reasons, those reasons. So he's not uninformed, he's not just taking pot shots. But then he shows there's a hole in the bucket. There's a hole over here, there's a hole over there, the thing is a sieve. It's not really a bucket. It doesn't hold. And then, so it's good reason, audience, scientists, or whoever, to take a look at a possible other model, because a model that doesn't have so many holes in it. So let's look at the Vedic model. But before going to the Vedic model, he doesn't just give it a bad name. He specifically, in their own language, points out the inconsistencies, the fallibility, the language of science is falsifiability. So we sometimes have to do that also, not just with scientists, but anybody. Part of the problem is lack of integrity. That is, you know, when the fallacy or falsifiability is pointed out, they still go back to the same point and go back to the same point and go back to the same point. They're dishonest. Because there's this incapacity to be humble. So it's much easier with Sanatan Goswami, although superlatively qualified, identifying himself as not qualified. And in his case, Sanatan Goswami points out as proof, people say I'm a pundit, but the fact is I don't even know what I am. Can you please instruct me? Kayami? What am I? And then 2 months instruction, day, all day long instruction, because here's a fit recipient. So you can fill up that fit recipient and it doesn't leak out because there's humility. And then with that humility, then an eagerness to know. I know that I don't know and I want to know. We find people that say they want to know, but they really don't want to know. They just want reinforcement of what they think. Or they don't say, I want to know. They say, this is the way it is. Prove me wrong. That's what scientists do. So Prabhupada would turn it around. I have a theory. Prove me wrong. I was on a morning walk with Prabhupada. I was doing that. I've shared this many times. I have a theory. He looked, you know, held his head up and looked around. The moon has cool flame. Prove me wrong. He didn't say this is what the scientists do, but it was really clear this is what he was doing. Whether he believed that the moon has cool flame or not, I don't know. But what I believe he was doing, the sense that I got is he was saying, this is what the science, you know, on what authority? Because I'm a scientist. I say something. Prove me wrong. And it's our business to prove them wrong? Well, what about prove it right? Like, okay, life comes from chemicals. Here's the chemicals. Produce life. Or something. So, not just to pick on scientists, but the message is that it's the message of humility is a preliminary, and Brahma's got that humility. Now he got a little carried away. More than a little carried away. He made an offense. But he has become very humble. And it's not just he got kind of hit in the side of the head and now he's humble. Now that can happen too. But he had a desire, a curiosity desire to see what's the limit of the opulences, the potencies of Krishna, having just seen the Agasura demon drama or Leela. And then Krishna sat down right afterwards and having lunch with the cowherd boys. Like, whew. Little boy. What's the limit? No limit. And then so light went on. He was, his curiosity was abundantly satisfied. No limit. But meanwhile, in doing what he did, it was offensive. And now he's recognizing, so it's helpful for us, similarly, to recognize who we really are is insignificant. I remember hearing Prabhupada saying, Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great, we're very small, we should serve him. That is Krishna consciousness. Now, God is very great. People in the theistic world, religious world, they have this idea how great that God is great, but how great he is? Andantarasta paramanuche antarastam. He is greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest at the same time. He's outside of everything, he's inside of everything at the same time. He is a person and he's everywhere at the same time. And how is that? Well, there's a science to it that's within the Vedas, but it's not a contradiction, because within the Absolute is everything. He expands himself everywhere by his energies. He expands himself everywhere within those energies by Paramatma. So he, by his portion of a plenary portion, is everywhere. And at the same time, he's not everywhere, because Bhagavan feature is in the spiritual world, and his Paramatma feature is everywhere. They're one and the same, but different. So, that's a mystery. And people that look at mysteries have different, you know, Sherlock Holmes ideas of how to solve the mystery. There is no God, or it's mythology, or God is oneness, or, you know, different. So, God is great, and the nature of that greatness, there's one that's being presented here. And just some Prabhupada appreciation, and then I'm going to end. I grew up on the East Coast, so I didn't know the stories that happened so much on the West Coast, but something that happened on the East Coast happened the same thing in L.A. The one that I knew was Brahmananda. There's an L.A. version with Krandar. But this Prabhupada gave the same question, same answer. So it goes, same as what we hear here. Prabhupada, I have so much service, and I have so many people lauding and praising and appreciating me, and it's really hard to remain humble. Prabhupada, how to remain humble? And without a blink, same as what's here, Prabhupada saying, in the spiritual sky, Krishna Loka is there. Krishna Loka is shaped like a lotus flower, and there's innumerable petals, and its dimensions are limitless. And one of the expansions of Krishna is Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. And Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha presides over limitless numbers of spiritual planets in the vastness of the spiritual sky. In one corner of that vastness of the spiritual sky, there's a cloud of material energy called Mahatattva. In that cloud of the material energy called Mahatattva, a portion of a plenary portion of Narayan expands himself in that Mahatattva. And from the pores of the body of Mahatattva come limitless universes. And one of those universes, there's Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma is in the topmost planet. And one of those planets in this one universe is the Earth planet. And this Earth planet, there's seven continents. And seven continents, one of them is North America. In North America, there's one country, the United States. In one United States, there's one state called New York State. In that New York State, there's a city called New York City. There's so many streets and avenues in New York City, and we're standing here on Mott Street, and you're asking me, how do I become humble? And there's a similar story, you know, Los Angeles story. And each of us has some service. And with that service comes some authority and responsibility, and we can easily become attached to a false sense of importance. Fill in the blank. It's the nature of a heart that is not yet pure. So humility is an essential step in the direction, in reality, not just the false kind, the real kind. The real kind is real soul, and we're really tiny. And we have some service to do, and that service to do is by the grace of God, and the ability to do that service is by the grace of God, and the resources to do that service is by the grace of God, and it all can be taken away in a flash. Not that God becomes, he withdraws his grace, but he may help us to become humble. And, you know, humble in a spiritual conception, not the other kind. Not the material kind. Not the trembling and timidity and all those coming and going kinds of material humility, because material humility comes and it goes. The modes of nature come and they go. So not circumstantially created, but resting upon a spiritual conception, we're really tiny. And Brahma's position compared to us, we're insignificant, position-wise, compared to Brahma. But Brahma's very clear. And this thing, seven spans, in the Bible, there's this other term, cubit. It's, you know, the tip of your finger to your elbow. And, you know, you measure things by cubits. Somehow basketball players that are really tall, they have big hands. I don't know how it works. You know, seven from your pinky to your thumb, and seven of those is the height of your body. Never tried it. But so how scientific it is, I don't know, but it's a measurement that Brahma speaks of, at least seven spans. It's measurable. And how is Krishna measurable? The message being quoted here in these commentaries is the pores of the skin are small. And it, you know, there's hairs in the pores of the skin, but there's also perspiration that comes from the pores of the skin. And they're small. You can get, your body can be wet when it's really hot and the pores open and water comes out. But the body of Mahavishnu a causal ocean. In Garbhadak Jai Vishnu, a whole ocean. A whole ocean that fills up half the universe. How big is his body? That from the pores of his body, even in the seed form, come a whole universe. How big is his body? How small are the seeds that then become a whole universe and then are withdrawn just by his will? We can't do things by our will. We have some will. We can't do things just by our will. He doesn't have to do anything. And so on, to describe his mahatvam, his greatness. If we remember his greatness, it's easy to have a spiritual conception of humility. But if you're in Maya, you don't forget, you don't remember his greatness, and you think something else. That's the influence of Maya, forgetfulness of Krishna. He becomes covered, and I become important. Independent, significant. It's a natural part of an elevated person to this humility. And if there's a slip in that humility, then he's doing the right thing. Both both internally and externally. Let's see if there's any discussion. Yes.
Maharaj, I was talking to one of our neighbors.
One of your what?
Neighbors.
What's
like
the
a neighbor.
Word? Neighbors.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she was telling me that she's a vegetarian, and her daughter is also a vegetarian, and they both try to help the animals, and they do some kind of a welfare activity. So we were having a conversation, and I was telling her about Vishwakarma Prabhu, that one of our friends is not doing well and so forth.
You were saying which?
About, like, talking about Vishwakarma Prabhu.
Okay, Vishwakarma is present.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So she told me, no,
my hearing, recording. You're doing fine. Others can understand, and I'm
so
struggling.
So she was telling me that I know that this life is not the only life. We have to take more lives. But then she was saying that I don't really know if the soul really exists, or I don't really know like what's beyond this, but I know this is not the last life that I have to take. So I just wanted to find out, like, what could be the next thing that we can suggest to a person like this who knows that this is not the last life, but at the same time they're not really clear in terms of, like, what is it after this?
What happens after this?
Yes.
So what can you do with your neighbor or someone who's in that situation? This isn't last, but what's next, I don't know. Well, depending on the person, but you can try the Dehi Nosman Yata Dehe message. And as during this lifetime, this is the flow, so after this lifetime, it's the same flow. Not only there's a life after this one, but in the course of her life, or daughter, she has a daughter, in the course of your daughter's life, depending upon, you know, in English terminology, but guna and karma, she's making choices, and making choices. Then her life looks like this, and then making other choices, her life looks like that, and making other... So mothers relate with their children. So what happens tomorrow is based upon the choices today. And what happens the day after tomorrow happens on the basis of the choices today and tomorrow. And just add up the moments and days, and that's what happens according to, you know, guna and karma. You can introduce the concepts, but, you know, urdhvam gacchanti sattvasta. All religion, you act in passion, you stay in Chicago, and you act in ignorance and you go down. That's just general. You know, then there's particulars. So which mode and which karma? And we're responsible for the choices, both guna and karma. That's where you go. That's what's next. And then after, you know, some discussion and she's digesting that, here's the good news. Bhagavad Gita teaches to go beyond all three of those. Beyond the modes of nature. Like, you know, not just be vegetarian, because it's good to be vegetarian, respect life, but go beyond vegetarian. and that's respect God, who is the source of life. And how do we do that? Well, for one thing, take your vegetarian food and offer it to God. Just like your daughter. I mean, moms understand things easily through their parenting experience. So supposing you give some allowance to your daughter and she's so much grateful to you for all of what you have extended to her. She saves up her allowance and makes a gift to you. Now, the gift to you is insignificant in monetary value, but it's the love with which the child is doing something for mom. It touches the heart of mom, and it strengthens that relationship. So that's what we do. To go beyond goodness is whatever we receive, we offer that. Yeah. Oh, you can try. It's not dogma. It's not an ism converting her to some ism. It's just natural. A life of devotion is natural. It's not this ism, that ism. And within your own lifestyle, you can find a nice way that you can think of things that you have received from God, by the grace of God, and you offer your thanks to Him, and even offer the gift that you have been given to Him, like your vegetarian food. Hungry. Your daughter, you know, the mom doesn't need the gift the child gives to mom. It's the benefit is for the child. If you train the child to do that, then the child may do it just because, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. And it's not the same as from the heart. So if you understand from your heart, so. And then that consciousness carries the soul to beyond, you know, the heavenly regions. That's novel. You know, there's something higher than heaven. The good place, you know. There's something higher than that. Doesn't mean don't be good, but there's a place higher than that. We can go to that place. Be good. You had something.
Kumar's not a well-formed question, but my thought process was going to this quality of humility that is being inspired by comparison with God's greatness and my insignificance. And then there seems like there's two things that inspire humility. One is this realization, and the other is recognizing the contamination of consciousness within. That a number of acharyas and great souls express as well. Is there a quality of consciousness?
Is there a quality of consciousness?
Difference in the quality of consciousness that is inspired by these two kinds of humility, so to speak.
What, identify once again the two kinds of humility. One
is feeling oneself insignificant in terms of, you know,
okay,
Anu versus Vibhu, and the other one recognizing the contamination of consciousness within.
Well, of course there's a difference, but they lead to the same place. Is that okay? One is this and the other is that.
I was also thinking in terms of, you know, sometimes when there may be too much anatta consciousness, that without the sense of this utterly subordinate to Krishna who's so great, then that can head in the wrong direction.
Sure. But, you know, the other one can head in the wrong direction too. Given tendencies, conditioned tendencies, that is forgetful. Pride. When the heart's not pure, I can think, you know, God is great and I'm small, and the next moment I'm great. In a heart that's not pure, that's what happens. Kapila Dev teaches this to Devahuti, that many things, knowledge can bring one up, but then, you know, the modes of nature pull one back down again. The modes of nature filter the mind, and the mind will then forget the knowledge and become again influenced by the modes. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, one have to make in general choices and one things and one according to one's experiences and understandings and knowledge and all these things. I'm trying to go a little deeper, if you may, you know, explain with your understanding of this. When you brought out this term integrity,
integrity,
and in terms of just dealing with with things that comes at us, that we have to make a particular analysis and choice and like that. What defines that integrity that you know, I'm trying to put it together, the question. Humility and integrity, you were sort of developing that, these two sort of close in what I understood, what you presented. How we define, or how we can understand that we exercise in this integrity, or this integrity is real, like that.
I'm not really clear what you're asking, but I can say something.
Yeah, please.
Spiritual conception, consistency over time, according to the spiritual conception. So the concept or the words or the conviction is consistent in decision making, conduct and speech like that. So another word is a Satchinandan Swami word, an alignment with the heart, the mind and the body. The integrity is where there's alignment. And if there's not alignment, then our convictions are one thing, our mind is another thing, and our behavior is another thing. So we're lacking lining up alignment of those three. You know, short answer, put your hand in your bead bag and see what happens. You know, for sure, the mind is not in alignment with our values.
So that means that the integrity...
That means that integrity is slipping. Now, in the sadhana stage, it is to be understood and accepted by me and you. you and all of us, that that's part of the preliminary stage or beginning stage or the sadhana stage where there's inconsistency. It's not, I'm not there yet. So, and you know, there's different ways of looking at integrity. If the intention doesn't change, but the mind keeps moving, then that doesn't mean I don't have integrity. It means I'm not purified yet. So there's different ways of looking at this language, integrity language. Just, you know, take the definition of Rupa Goswami of what bhakti is, and you have what integrity is. Anukoyena Krishna Rishilanam. Even in the sadhana stage, because the driving force in the sadhana stage becomes manifest in the more mature stages. Krishna is to be pleased by the moving and the non-moving parts of my existence, my deep convictions and the moving parts, and cultivating that, moving in that direction. That's integrity. That's bhakti. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, a couple questions on humility.
On?
Humility.
Humility.
So one, we understand that all qualities are expressed to their superlative degree within the spiritual realm. So some of Krishna's associates, like Lalita, you know, she's feisty and she puts her hands on his, on her hips, and she taunts Krishna,
yeah.
And other associates of Krishna will, you know.
Different, right.
So how do we, so is it that their mood of service to Krishna?
They know what pleases Krishna.
And because,
and they're inspired from their heart to do what is pleasing to Krishna, both.
And so therefore they're being humble even in those situations?
Yes. Arjuna fighting for the pleasure of Krishna. That's real humility. A warrior going off, you know, a kshatriya giving protection as a service to the Supreme Lord. That's his duty. So that's true humility. Doesn't sound like it. If you're, you know, love and peace, then you're, that's not humble. From a spiritual conception, that's humility. Second?
Lord Brahma expresses humility in these series of prayers that we are going through.
Yes.
And in his next birth, he takes the form of Haridas Thakur, who is superlatively humble.
Yeah.
And is declared the Namacharya for. So, this quality of humility is so essential to being able to chant the holy name in a mood of service. And yet, because we are attached to a false sense of importance, you said, being the nature, being that we are not pure, we're not.
Yeah.
Humble, so you know, we're chanting and we're attached to this false
striving.
Sense of importance for ourself.
Abhyasa with faith. That's the corrective measure. Krishna's mercy and our effort of practicing with faith. The two. That's the clearing stage. Not the complacent stage, the clearing stage. That's where we are. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.